This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, Georgie, check for Dadsy. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get rewards points delivered too. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery free and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Leicester City have a penalty kick in the 6 minutes of injury time.
Knockout takes. Almunia saves. Knockout follows in. Almunia saves again.
And now what?
I was trying to be innovative. I was trying to think. We had our systems and processes up in place. We were very professional in what we did. But I wanted to have a bit of fun. I wanted them to enjoy coming in. I wanted them in years to come talk about it, just like we are now.
Absolutely. They still do. They still do. Because like I say, we've spoken to players from that year. And they just, things like Cardiff, when you took them to the ground the day before and let them walk around it and stuff like this. And there's... Yeah, and what was the other thing as well? So I think there was a period where, maybe a bit later on, where they weren't playing so well at home. So you tried to make them feel as if they were playing away by making them stay in hotels and then bust them in and things like that. It's just those sort of innovations. Absolute genius, really.
Well, I was lucky. A lot of people I could call up, a lot of people I could speak to and were honest and tell me what they think. Some of the like would go, oh, I'm not sure about that, Ed. They'd go, well, great idea. But the Cardiff one... definitely did this. Clive Woodward, who I knew because he was at Southampton at the time. And he got talking about the rugby union and when they won in 2003 and what they did. And he didn't want any of the players to be coming into a place for the first time. So I thought, what's a great idea? We're going to do it. So, and I also knew, because I came from Leeds, that the Leeds wives and girlfriends and family members, they were like second thought in terms of getting them to the game. And so we made sure with the chairman and the chairman's wife and all the board and staff, made sure that the wives and my wife, Emma, organised it to make sure that they came down and they stayed in Cardiff so they knew where they were going to be just for a couple of nights and then come back. So we went to the Millennium, we looked around, we looked at the pitch, we knew what it was going to be. We came back and there was no surprises. And when we did get through that second semi-final, playoff semi-final, and we then went into the game itself, we were prepared to the point where I was so nervous that the lads and the staff just dealt with it because they all knew what they were doing.
Before that, of course, and by the way, and anybody who listens to this podcast will go, you didn't do that with AD Boothroyd. Yes, I'm about to. If we were going to put this into a kind of edit into parts, it would be AD going, and then we chose to do the firewalk.
I went there.
Of course I did. Let's go back to, we're going down to Selhurst Park. Crystal Palace now a little bit of a rivalry with us and since then. But that performance down at Selhurst Park was quite remarkable. I appreciate we're probably going to get on and talk about the one-size-fits-all kind of clash on the second leg. But that first one, what kind of... We'd had the Ipswich game. How did you feel everything was going into that semi-final? Bearing in mind that teams who finish third often end up kind of feeling like, oh, no, we're in the playoffs. You'd prepared them already for it, and it seemed like that worked. Were there any other kind of levels of preparation, or were the teams similar to the final? Were they just at it at that point?
Well, they were at it, but the Palace team beat us twice Leeds beat us twice. Remember Valentine's Day when Ron Gregan and Endo were having a little toil and he got sent off. But the game was a 12:30 kickoff at Selhurst Park. And I wanted his, because traffic could be horrendous. So we did what we normally do, and we got there early and stayed in a hotel. And I remember Ian Dowie, who I think is a terrific manager and a really good guy, he'd gone to watch the second game in Leeds. So it was almost a slap in the face. So he came up on the TV. Ian Dowie and his brother have decided to go and watch Leeds rather than prepare for their game tomorrow. And I used it and I said that to the lads, look, if we get this right, I know they've got good players. If we get this right, we can win this. And I know you might be having your doubts, but we come this far, we can. And I made him get up in the morning and go for a walk. And I kept saying to him all the time, it's going to be a walk in the park, walk in the park. So I was leveling that in all the time, saying to the players, this is what it's going to be. Then we got to the game. The first half was like the Alamo. They were fantastic. Ben Foster was brilliant. We were playing 4-4-2. We were getting battered in midfield. And all I did was took Darius Henderson off, put Alban Gora on, and we went with three, and we went to counter-attack because I didn't think we could withstand it. I thought we were going to crack. Anyway, as sometimes happens, you'd be a lucky manager and things come off for you, and sometimes you can be really unlucky. Well, we got lucky, and the 3-0 flattered us from the first half, but the second half, the tactic and the energy and... Coralli, I talked about Coralli a lot. Yeah. He's a guy with a baggy like pajama pants on, if you remember, the goalkeeper. And I said to Ash, I said, watch how low he gets before he springs. Because most goalkeepers get themselves set and they're quite high up. But he was like a little coiled spring. And I didn't think he could get into the top corners. And that's all I said to Youngie. Look at this. You can put that in there. You can do that every time. And he did, and he scored. And the next thing before we knew it, Marlon King's got up the pitch against Darren Ward. Darren's tried to get in front of him. Marlon spun him, put him in, 2-0. And we talked about this before the game, about the Wolves and Ipswich playoff practice.
Yeah.
That if we get to 80 minutes and we think we can nick another one, we're going to go, because that would be a killer blow. And thankfully we did. Quick throw, Matthew Spring, goal, 3-0. But if we'd have won 1-0, it probably would have been better. Because three was like, all we're going to talk about is how we threw it away. And because that's how your mind starts to work. So you've got to be disciplined to go, right, okay. But leading up to that game, I played it cool and I looked cool, but I can assure you, I absolutely wasn't. I was nervous because I'd said all these big things at the start of the season and they actually might come true. That in itself was like, right, I've got to double up here. I've got to pretend even better. I've got to be a really good actor. And thankfully, when the game came and went, again, it was one of those moments. I sat in the front seats next to Keith Birkinshaw. All the Watford fans were in the pub, came out, surrounded the bus, banging and all that sort of stuff. Then we got going and we were going up the road towards the hotel, and I've put my hand to my head and go, Keith, what are we going to do now? What are we going to do? But all that gummy stuff, I said, I haven't got no plans for the Premier League. I don't know what we're going to do. And he just said, AD, enjoy it. And I thought to myself, I can't. I've got to be thinking about what we're going to be doing next season. What we've got Man United, Chelsea, and Christ. So that was the sort of little bit behind the scenes with the Coralli and with what we were going to do. We knew how we were going to play. And in the end, there was a little bit of, well, is Darius going to play in the final, or is Alban Gora going to play in the final? And in the end, I just said to Endo, the night of the game, the semi-final game, when I had Man Ruckus with Fitzall, I said to him, you are definitely going to be starting, mate. So don't worry about it. You're going to start.
Yes, so I remember the Fitzall ruckus. It ended up with you getting sent to the stands, didn't it, I think?
Yeah, that in itself. And years later, I was in Poland with the under-21s and I see this guy coming towards me and he's an absolute monster. And I'm thinking, who is this? Anyway, he comes over to me and he goes, Eddie. And straight away, I saw his eyes. I went, all right, Fitz. I said, he's an agent that looked after one. I think Redders, I think he looked after him. And he said, all right, Eddie. I said, all right, Fitz. I said, now we're going to finish off that fight. And he just laughed on. I mean, you know, why on earth I did that? Well, no, why? Because it was just nervous, like kick the ball away. And when I turned around and looked at him, I was ready for a fight with him. But Ian Dowie said to me, Eddie, what are you doing? He's like, he's a Golden Gloves boxing champion and he's 6'7". We've got some sort of secret weapon, have you? You know, weapon somewhere. So, yeah, so that was embarrassing. And I got sent to the stand. But I still see the fourth official that sort of got me and went, Eddie, no, he will kill you. Started walking away. And then it all ensued, and you know, as it shows us, there was all the staff and all the players got in a big ruckus. But that actually helped us because it slowed the game down. I sat in my, went and sat in my seat next to Keith Birkinshaw, and he looked at me and he went,
"It was definitely one of the more entertaining nil-nils I've seen for sure." Yeah.
So you get there, you've gone down to Cardiff before the game, as you say, you're feeling nervous. The tunnel and the atmosphere in the tunnel has become a thing of legend in terms of whether or not psychologically they were outthought and outfought at that stage. I imagine it's probably not a silver bullet that does these kind of things. It's probably far more nuanced. But did that just go was that the epitome of this kind of real never say die kind of attitude coming out and the confidence that you and your whole staff have put into them at this particular point, that they were so loud and we're not going to be intimidated against a team who, as you say, have done them twice in that particular season?
Well, the honest answer is that, yeah, they had confidence, but we practiced it. We practiced what we were going to do in the tunnel.
Oh, look at this. This is what we want to hear. Go on, fire away. I love this.
So we lined them up and said, right, what would you say? Really simple stuff. What would you do if you're going out for a final and you're really nervous? Show me. And then I was like a little bit embarrassed. I said, well, come on, I'll show you. So I did sort of put my head down and looked like I was intimidated. And I said, do you want us to look like that? No. Well, I said, how do you want to look? Well, we want to look like that we're ready for a fight, or that we're ready for... Okay, so show me how we'd look then. So one or two bums started jumping about, a lot of noise. And the Leeds lads were like, what's going on here? And I remember as our team came out and went to the right, their team went left. There was a load of, like, the most grounds have now, don't they? All the fireworks go off.
Yeah, yeah.
And the explosion is what it was. One of them went boom. It was like really yeah. loud, if I remember right.
Our lads never moved an inch. And the Leeds lads were like, oh my God, Rob Holes nearly fell over. So we practiced it. And then a season later, I was noticing when we went to Man United in the Premier League, and I thought, God, did this team are giants. Ferdinand Rio's a big lad anyway, but he looked even bigger. And I looked down at the floor, and Man United had raised the floor.
Oh, wow.
Raised the floor and lowered the height of the door. So I looked at it and I thought, clever. So I went back to Vicarage Road and I said, right, I need this because we need all the help we can get here. We're in the Premier League, so we want you to raise the floor, and what we want you to do is lower the doors. So we looked like we were monsters.
Yeah.
And it might have I was just trying for any little 1% to get us a win or even get us a corner. But that's what we did, and that all came from that where they acted in the tunnel.
Wow.
I love the atmosphere in that ground that day, because I think the roof was on, wasn't it? So it was a really brilliant atmosphere in that game. I just remember it clearly. And three very different goals. JD Merritt's header, James Chambers' squirrely, squirrely kind of goal, and then Darius with the penalty at the end. Was he always going to be the penalty taker, Darius?
Yeah, always. Although when Marlon won it, he started grabbing the ball, and thankfully he gave it straight to him because it would have had a Pochettino decision to make. But yeah, no, they all knew who took what and who did what and when. And we had on the set pieces, we had a 2-second rule. So if you see something within 2 seconds, then everybody's got to be ready for it. So it might be a quick pass through. It might be wait until somebody turns their back. But the 2 seconds is there. And once we do it, then we all get set and we all know what we're doing.
Very nice. So there you are in the, whatever it's called now, the Principality Stadium, I suppose now. And the game is going there. We are 3-0 up. At what stage, or how many seconds before the final whistle, how many minutes are you thinking, we're there, we've got this? I'm not saying relax, but at what point do you start thinking we're there? And then how long after the final whistle do you start panicking again about the Premier League coming?
Well, that was in the bus. That was in the bus because I could enjoy the moment because they threw a load of beer on me and whatever else threw me around, and everybody was dancing in the changing room, as you do get when you get a euphoric dressing room.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was, I remember I got a text from my manager saying, you know, you don't let them throw beer on you. But they did anyway, so I had no choice. So to answer your question, I think Endo scored his penalty. I might be wrong, but in between 70 and 80 minutes, and every single second of that time, I was thinking about, right, just see it off. Just see it off. Just do your job. See it off. No, you know what you're doing. And then that was it. It was done. It was done.
Fantastic stuff. Now, we have asked for a bit, yeah, and this is a wonderful time to just pause a minute and ask some of the, or make some of the comments, actually, that we've got through, because I appreciate that both Justin and Carl have already slobbered all over you, and you're probably clearing spittle off of your shirt there, but yeah. Other people have come back and said, just want you to know a few things. So here we go. Yeah, did he tell the players to be loud in the Millennium Tunnel? Which was the better performance, the semi-final at Palace or the final? There you go. That's from Chris Bone, he of the potatoes in Lincolnshire, everybody, but a fine Watford fan. Which one do you think, if we just take away, obviously, the raising of the trophy at the end, were you more proud of the semi-final and the tactical change and the coming through that, or the final?
I think that final, and we're all now obsessed with playoffs, aren't we? Goodness knows where we were before, but nothing can take the it was one of the most one-sided playoff games I think I've ever seen. And for that, they turned up, they did their bit, but we were just on it. We were just those flow minutes and moments where you think, yeah, like the goal going in.
Yeah.
I knew we were going to score from the header. Yeah, I know we practiced it, but I knew where it was going to drop. I knew, and everybody else knew as well. We were so well prepared, because through the season, we'd had some downs as well as some ups. We'd got some heavy defeats. We got beat 4, I think, by Coventry. But for me, it'd have to be the final. Nothing gets near the final.
That's good. Mike Smart said, no particular question, but I hope he knows he is held in high regard. What a season he gave us. One of my favourite ever. After I gave him a really hard time at the start of the season's forum, you mentioned those, but he said, forever grateful for the memories of 05-06. There's some lovely stuff and lots of people saying it is right up there with all of the days that they've had. But Chris Forfer comes out with a great one. He said, one of his favourite sayings that he heard, he said, was that the most important space on the field is between your ears. Or you get in the players thinking. Which player during his management time at Watford had the best footballing brain, in your opinion? That's a good question, Chris. This isn't the place we come for good questions. You're going to lose us our reputation for mindless rubbish. But who was the best one? Yeah.
I think I'd have to say Youngie. Ash, I'd have to say he had the best football brain. He knew how to pick it up in pockets. He knew how to make space for others. And that's probably why he's managed to last as long as he has, and he's still going. But I'd have to say that Ashley Young would be that player. Can I have two? I say Tommy Smith as well.
He's a lovely guy. Tommy Smith, love him.
He was there Saturday, which was brilliant. I got to see him as well.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. He wasn't trying to sell you a house, was he? That's what he does.
No, not this time, but maybe if I go back, he'll try and do it. I don't know.
Right. So you were getting into the Premier League,
yeah,
Peter,
yeah.
Right?
So obviously, the Premier League, I think there's an interesting question around teams who go up via the playoffs lose probably a month or so in terms of being able to plan to get into the Premier League, i.e. what changes you can make and what you can do. You've done it. We've won that final and we're there. After the panic on the bus stops, how do you go about trying to plan for that? Because I think we can see, and we've seen it now on over 20 seasons since, that getting up via the playoffs is a wonderful thing, but staying there is as close to an impossible task as you can possibly get in terms of doing it. What were the fundamental things, do you think, that kind of made it even harder? I mean, obviously, I'm thinking about Marlon King's injury that he got. I think a lot of Watford fans look at it and think, if he hadn't, what might have been? But what were your take on how things went, and any things that you think you would look at and do differently from that season?
Well, I think losing Marlon was a huge blow, because and we saw that when he came back for the latter part of the season and went on a little winning spree. We won 2 or 3 games, and then he went to Hull and Coventry, and so he was a key player for us. And to lose him was a nightmare, because it was right on the edge of deadline day as well. It was a killer timing one. And really, I think I was giving a bit of criticism at the time about for not getting strikers in. And to be honest, looking back, I probably should have done. But who do you bring in to fill that void?
Yeah.
Because he's a huge player for us. But I think the other thing that we probably did, and we alluded to him as a strength, is like the maximal gains. So just trying to do the smallest little things to make a difference. And it's like Dave Brailsford talked about with the cycling, what are the 1%? Mm-hmm. Rather than the 1%, we should have looked at not minimal gains, but maximum gains. And we ended up having a lot of players, but they were all without trying to be too cryptic, there were players that were very similar to what we already had. So I moved out Matthew Spring and brought Damian Francis in. To be honest, if I look back on it, and no disrespect to any of the players that I work with, I remember making an emotional decision on Springy, and I shouldn't have done it. I should have kept him because he knew what we wanted. And maybe I probably broke it up the squad. I was desperate to get Premier League players in. Uh-huh. But actually, I had some good lads in there that maybe if we'd have spent a bit more, rather than getting four players, get one player. And so that would have been a better route to go down. And also keep the one or two of them a little bit longer. And of course, you can't do anything when you lose your top player. When Youngie went to Villa, that was great for him, but not so good for us.
Of course.
Because I knew your top striker's gone and your top assist's gone. What surprise, you're going to struggle in a league that is the best. So there's a lot of, I don't cry about it. I'm absolutely proud and privileged to have managed Watford and to be promoted and get in the Premier League and play against Benitez, Mourinho, Sir Alex, Alan Kirbishley, who was a big hitter then. All top managers. And again, I used to have to do it every week. What are we going to do now? So we'd go to Chelsea and we'd lose. And we think, right, okay, what have we got to do? We're forever trying to find ways to win.
And it becomes almost, it takes it away from the one thing the manager can do is try to influence and impact the performance. And then from the performance comes the results. But I remember, for example, you mentioned Mourinho. I remember them winning 1-0 at the Vic, but we were in that game all the way. And it almost just feels like on occasions, and of course we've had five seasons of it recently, where it's so unforgiving that it must get to a point where you're almost pulling your hair out around those. And it was at that point when the Premier League money was really starting to pile in. You were really coming up, as you say, against the Man Uniteds, the Chelseas, with fantastic, ridiculous level, world-class management in it as well. So astonishing stuff. One thing I'd like to ask is, within that particular season, we also signed, I remember, Danny Shittu. Now, one of the things we like people to do, and we've done this with lots of players, we go through and we give them their certain managers and they give us a one-word review. We call it our 1 in 10. I'm going to go through, I'm just going to name some players, and all I want is your one-word review. And it might be anything. Some of them we've already spoken about, but it might just be something funny. It might be something silly, what have you. If you want to tell us the story about it after, fine. But you could just say teapot and leave it at that. The choice is yours. Are you ready, sir? Here we go. We are going for our 1 in 10. Let me get... Here we go. Let's have a bit of UB40 and start this off properly. There you go. I know AD's won us, you know, promotions and, you know, done England and all of that, but he should be involved in the silliness as well. Bit of UB40, good start. Let's start with, as we say... Yeah, exactly. Dan Shittu. Give us a one-word review of Danny Shittu.
Power.
Yeah.
I think that explains itself, doesn't it?
I'm not going to say anything other than a positive number because he's Sol's elder brother.
He was great. He pops up with the odd goal, didn't he, from corners and stuff, Danny Shittu.
He was like so strong. And I don't know whether he ever forgive me for leaving him out of the FA Cup semi-final because he got to make really tough decisions and he was one. And you're like later on thinking, because at the time when you're young and you're foolish, you think you're going to play in 6 or 7 FA Cup semi-finals. But of course, when your career's over, you realise that was your one chance. Wow. So that was difficult for a manager to make. But when I left him out, I think he'd had enough.
Yeah,
he'd had enough.
And
he had his positive moments. I've got to say that. I think he was top scorer from set players in that year. We were a few points clear, weren't we, in November?
I remember him getting some goals, heading them in. He was great from corners and stuff and free kicks. Yeah, absolutely fantastic, Danny Shittu, yeah.
Well, I was doing non-league at the time. I was over at Aylesbury United and QPR came. So this is before we'd signed. And I remember basically going, where did the sun go? As I was literally in his shadow. He was just immense. But what can you do?
Yeah.
Hello, my name is Lloyd Doyley and you are listening to the Do Not Scratch Your Eyes podcast.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus. Serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Let's go for one. Didn't get many games, but obviously you mentioned him earlier on. Alec Chamberlain, as a person, as a player, one word review about the man.
He's class. Oh. He's just a brilliant guy and just measured, I think, to my first season. So in that 2004-05 season when we got last few games of the season, took Richard out and put Alec in and he was fantastic. He just settled everybody down. Couldn't kick it very far anymore, but, you know, he kept the ball out of the net. He organised others and he kept everybody calm. But he's just a class act. He's such a lovely guy.
You mentioned about Richard Lee and Chambo talking, and you talking about what you can do to help Ben Foster, a very young Ben Foster at the time. As a manager, bearing in mind, obviously, you're dealing with footballers all the time, but not only footballers, these other strange people, like drummers in bands, goalkeepers, strange, yeah, odd folk, but they work in this little kind of triumvirate, and we've seen a lot of this, and yet they seem to be in competition with each other, yet also incredibly supportive of one another. And of course, Chambo ended up becoming the goalkeeper coach at Watford for about a decade or so from that point on. How much do you get involved with the goalkeeping kind of coaching or kind of involvement, and how much do you get to leave them be, and when can you pull them in to interact with the team dynamic? How do you get that balance right?
Yeah, good question, because they like to be on their own. They don't want to be with anybody else. If we're in the jungle, they'd just be meerkats just off on their own, I think. But I said very early on, I want you with us in the training.
Cool.
You do the warm-up with us, and you know, you do whatever you need to do, and then you're in with us every day. And Jambo said, well, can I have him first thing in the morning and then have him? Yeah, no problem. So we would be communicating all the time. But yeah, goalkeepers are, I always seem to find myself with goalkeepers because they're a funny breed. Like you say, they like to be on their own every now and again, don't they? But our guys were, they all stuck together. They had a good, because it is difficult when you, particularly if you're going to be the number two for a season, you've got to get your head around that and realise that he's the number one and you're there, or maybe get a cup run or something. But
There was an amazing Ben Foster moment in that 05-06 season away at QPR, yeah, when they thought it scored and he walloped it up the other end and we scored with a
youngie put it
seconds.
In. Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I was in the QPR end that day.
Comment, wasn't it? That's like, don't scratch your eyes.
Yeah.
It was just, they're all giving it that because they thought they'd scored. Ben turned around and thought, well, that hasn't gone over the line. Walloped it up the other end. Oh, my God, what a goal. Yeah, yeah. So that's another memory I have from that. So I've got loads of memories from that season. They just keep popping up. It's, what a season.
Well, I've got all evening because I'm out of a job, so you can stay with me.
Get me
a job at the end of it. That's a bonus.
Yeah, well, I don't think we're not going to get to that question in terms of it. Lovely stuff. I like that very much. Yeah, we got a friend of the podcast who we always talk to the opposition, and our QPR friend is a gentleman called Richard Honey, who's a QPR fan, who every single time we get to talk to him, we bring out that clip and just make it show, because he always talks about he was up and supporting and just in his head in hands, and then they both look up and they basically kind of exchange position as the goal goes down the other end. Lovely
great,
stuff.
Just great. What a goal that was. What a game.
And a big hello to Richard Honey, obviously. There we go. Well, we just said, what about, and just a one-word review, any kind of ideas you said? Chris Eagles, because as you said, he followed in and came in as Paul Devlin went out. Chris Eagles, memory or thought of him?
Very talented. And because I had a relationship with Sir Alex, what I used to do, and still do actually, is I used to, every month, I'd give him I'd send him a letter because I knew he liked receiving things, but not everybody sent him letters or spoke to him on the phone. So it was like, we've got your player now. I made sure I stayed in contact with him. So I said to Sir Alex, could we take Chris Eagles? He said, yeah, let me know what you think about him. So sent him a letter back, highly, he's been professional, he's looked after himself. I don't think he really loves football that much, but that's the modern day player. They don't all get as excited as we three do about 1982 World Cups and everything else.
Quite right.
So that's, but yeah, I got to the point where I let Dev go because I knew that Chris was going to be, give us something different. But in the end, Chris was fit, and I phoned Sir Alex and said, I'm going to leave Chris out. And he said, okay, why? And I said, well, because I think we've got, for what the game needs and for who we've got, which was James Chambers. And he scored the goal. I'm going off on a tangent a bit.
That's right.
But he scored a goal. And I don't think he played that many games that season, if I'm right. He played about three or four games in my first spell, the first season, sorry, when I came in and joined. Mm-hmm. But he hardly played in the season. And I used to use it as a, ironically, we talk about the goalkeepers, but the players that were on the periphery and weren't getting a game. And we worked really hard with them. And just said, make sure you just keep training now, make sure you keep doing your job. And he must have played five games that whole season before he went into a playoff semi-final because he played. Because I wanted us to be a little bit narrower. And James was another right back, really. And he got up and down and he helped us out and he helped Lloyd out. And they were a good athletic pairing for us. So I explained this to Sir Alex and he said, yeah, you're right. You crack on. Good luck. So I knew at the Millennium that we needed to have legs on the team and that we needed to have people that would stick to the game plan. And he did. And he ended up scoring, although he took a lot of stick for that because he used to say, anybody ever gave him any stick, he'd always come back with, have you scored in a playoff final? And the lads would have to say, well, no, not like that.
Was a weird goal for sure.
Absolutely.
Took forever to go.
Let's go for, as you said, Captain America, destined to be, and he did, Jay Demerit. One word memory or review?
Jay was single at the time, so I won't discuss any of that.
That was the sound of A.D. Boothroyd not throwing Jay Demerit under the bus. Well done. Excellent stuff.
He's, first of all, just such a lovely human being. What a guy. Just enthusiastic. Told you the story about him not knowing what he was talking about, so he didn't speak on the pitch. The lads absolutely loved him. They'd all be trying to speak with an American accent and everything else. So he'd come up with the odd Americanism, like a PK, and the lads would be on him. But he was just so well respected amongst everybody. He was a real terrific guy. Grew up really quickly. And I think that was because he had Malky and Clark Carlisle on the occasion by his side, shouting at him and telling him where he should be.
Very good. Very good. Now, here's an interesting one. Al Bangura. What a story that was.
Yeah. And you know what? That is great that we got a favourable outcome with Al. But what I will say is that there was a period in the season, I think in the Premier League, where that sort of almost took over the games. It got so big with the Foreign Office and everything else, that the Home Office, that it was like we had to really work hard to stay focused on what we were there for, which was the games. But when one of your players is going to get deported, it's like it's a tough one. It takes a bit of management, a bit of leadership from everybody, really. Again, massive smile. He used to play football for about 20p a day, for 20p a match in Freetown. And we can't imagine what he's come from. But the fact that we got him and we got him through, and I think he's still playing, but you know, he's probably about 42 now.
He works in a care home. He's like a caregiver. That's what he does. Or he certainly was about 2 or 3 years ago when I last saw it. I must confess, I am not stalking Al Bangura. I don't know what he's doing now, but I don't imagine it's changed a lot since then. But yeah, and apparently
he kept everybody on the toes in that midfield area and in training. You always need somebody in training, I believe, that's going to frighten a few players and trains as they play, if you like. And he used to boot people everywhere. And incidentally, how he got himself into the team, we were playing Stoke away. We won 1-0. We're playing Stoke away. And every Thursday, what I did was I got the staff versus players match going on. So it'd be all the young kids. I'd speak to Dave Dodds and the academy staff, Chris, and say, right, okay, who's doing well this week? Who do you want to play against the staff? And the physios had come out and the sports science had come and do all the stretches and the coaches had just walk out with a cup of tea and we'd have a game against the kids because I wanted to be able to see the club quickly and what we had.
Yeah.
And we had a player called Amaru, and Al Bangora was fantastic in this game. So one leading up to this Stoke game, we were playing, and I've gone to see if I can get near him, and he's done me with his most amazing nutmeg. And everybody's obviously laughs, but doesn't want to really laugh because he's the manager. And he's nutmegged me, and he's gone and scored, and he's come back, and he's done a little celebration, put his big smile on. And I said to Keith, I said, he's all right, he is. He'll do for us. And we took him, we put him on the bus. He came up with us. He was on the bench. And then Neil Cox got injured. And it was like, oh, no, sorry, not Neil Cox. We had a midfield injury. And I said, get Alan. And they looked at me. He's only had one training session with the staff in a five-a-side. I said, I know. He'll be fine. And there was a bit of pressure on at the time. But I just thought I could make a massive statement to the player who I thought was had enough. It was a good player. I could make a statement to the academy that you have got a chance. So keep going and don't just play with no purpose. You're playing to get in this team because he's got in. And that was one of the key things early on. And it also said to the staff, everybody's got to be ready. So make sure we get him ready.
Lovely stuff. Lovely stuff. I like that very much. One of the players that we've touched on a little bit already, Darius Henderson, who yeah. You know, I think is much loved still at the club. He and Marlon, I think, are considered, if we look at partnerships, you're probably going to say something like Furlong, Dyer. You are, of course, going to say Ross Jenkins and Luther Blissett, but you're not long down the list before you get to both Darius and Marlon Kingplan. Tell us, give us a one-word memory of or review of Darius Henderson.
Well, I agree with what you said, totally said there about those two as a pairing. They were great. He took a lot of batterings but he enjoyed it, so it was fine. And he was okay. He was okay with that. But what he was better, a lot better player than actually people might have given him credit for. And probably he gives himself credit for. In fact, I probably think he was a better player than he thought he was a better player. But I remember one day thinking, there's more to this kid than just a battering ram. So I got him in the office and I was out shopping somewhere. And I saw this ornament of a samurai. So I bought it. I took it into training the next day. And I said, send Endo up. So I came up. He sat opposite me in the office. And I picked up the samurai thing out of my bag, put it on the table. And I said, that's for you. And he's like, well, he loves all that. He's like, oh, fuck, Gaffer, that's great. Why are you giving me that? And I said, because you're not a thinking centre forward, but you could be. And you could be more than what you are. So I'm asking you to stop thinking like a fairground boxer and just wants to swing airmakers and start thinking about being a better player and being a samurai, where you think a lot more about how you fight and what you do. And he was like, wow, this is great. So he took it into the changing room, put it down on his seat next to him. And when I saw him a few years later, I said, have you still got the samurai? He said, yeah, I bought eight. I just haven't
mentioned. That's brilliant. That partnership, I think it was the game against Sheffield United away. In 4-1. The. Oh, what a game that was. And those two were just amazing, amazing. And it was nice as well because Warnock was the manager, wasn't he? And very pleased with things. So that's always pleasing for us. So, yeah.
They bought him at the end of the season.
Yeah. Absolutely. Let's go to, and obviously, by the way, we will give AD's Samurai Ceramics a quick punt, obviously, because it's a very successful business now on the back of Darius Henderson. Should have been doing it. Let's go to, you mentioned him obviously coming in for placing Springy. Damien Francis came in. Memories of Damien Francis, because he came in obviously into the club at what was obviously a difficult season. But tell us a little bit about Damien.
He was really quiet, hardly spoke. He was just a shy guy, a just quiet, shy guy, never really said anything. The lads had tried to get him involved in the banter, but he just wasn't having any of it. He was just like smiling and getting with whatever he was doing. And up to that point, he'd scored a lot of goals. He scored for us against Everton first game of the season, I remember that. He had a knack for getting goals, but like I said, him and Springy, there weren't much in it really.
Very good, very good. Apparently he was impeccably dressed, according to both Maps and Luidinho, Yeah, apparently they said, well, when we said about who was the best dressed in there, they went, oh, Damien Francis, which was like, especially for Lloyd, that means he's gone through an awful lot of years when nobody has outstripped Damien Francis for the clobber. What about Gavin Mahon? Because I agree with you. I think he was underrated, undervalued, and he's one of those players who plays in that area. But you mentioned that spine that you had with Malky and Marlon at either end and him in the centre. A little bit about Gavin. Came to us and had a severe haircut because he was very hairy at Brentford. And he came to us. Came to us and improved that. Improved that straight away. Absolutely. What about Gavin?
Gav again was quite a shy guy, wicked sense of humour, And once, like any dressing room, if there's somebody in there that needs to get a bit of stick, he was after him. Didn't say an awful lot on the pitch, organised well, but just got around people and organised and put them into positions. And he's an agent now. I think he looks after a couple of really big players. But he was great for me. I got on the phone to him, which he found a bit weird, I think, at first. I like phoned him and said, what do you think about the game? On something Keith Birkinshaw said, why don't you give Gav a call? He said, I used to give Steve Perriman a call and we'd have a chat about the game. So I said, okay, good idea. So I called him up. The conversations were like 2 minutes. How do you think he went? Yeah, it was all right. He's like trying to get blood out of his gun. but over time, when I think he learned to trust me a little bit and I got to know him a little bit better. He was one of the main reasons we got promoted, that spine of the pitch and that organising of others. And just really, again, he had good rapport with all the staff, with all the players. Really good guy.
Nice. I'm going to go to a couple of players that people might not even necessarily think about as eight players, because everybody will say, obviously, that first season as what a highlight. But I'm really intrigued. One, because he's on a Christmas card list with Justin, is Tamás Priskin, who came into the club with you. He was a player who took you. He had a golden period right before we bloody sold him. But we come back to that challenge of how do you replace a player like Marlon, which proved very hard to do. And Tamás was one of them. What were your memories of Tamás?
He was quiet. If you got a smile out of him, it's probably one a week. He's a very thoughtful guy.
Yeah.
Nice guy. The lads all liked him. He's a good character. I can't think of anyone who I think, oh, he was a wrong and I didn't like working with him. They were all good lads. Some more confident and louder than others.
Yeah.
But Tamás, I felt for him because I like you do when you do your due diligence. We should have done it better than a lot of our players. But as you get older and as you get more experience, you get better at it. And I just thought it took him a little bit of time to get used to the standard. But he had some bad luck. I remember him scoring two against Everton and one of them getting chalked off for a header.
Yeah.
I think he scored one against Wigan when we had the waterlogged pitch.
We talked to him about that. Got called up, abandoned, didn't it? Yeah, I remember you coming out and kicking the ball across the pitch and going, nah, that's not happening. I thought, oh no.
He still resents that one.
You know what? I remember that very second when he was absolutely pouring down and I thought, there's no way this game's going to be on. And I thought to myself, I'll make everybody laugh and run and do a dive like a Jurgen Klinsmann dive. I thought, I'm going to do it. I'm going to get the crowd. They'll be able to like it. It'll be funny. So I was just to set off to go on this run and this Jurgen Klinsmann. And I looked behind me and Paul Jewell was there. And I thought, no, can't do it in front of him. So I remember that very second. I thought, no, I'm not going to do that.
No, I'll try to avoid that one.
Tamás was very unfortunate. But did he go to QPR? I think he stayed in this country.
He went to Ipswich Town for a bit and he tried to get reconnected with Brendan Rodgers. He went on loan at Swansea and I think that was what he wanted to do. But lovely bloke. We chatted to him and I remember because we went through his transfer kind of trail and he spent about two seasons in Russia. And we were saying, so how did you get on with the language barrier? And he said, oh, it's Slavic. After 6 weeks, I could speak Russian. She goes, what? It's these things that you never know about people that you just think the ability for ballers on occasions to be so, and I don't think it's something that you get credit for because you have to literally have boots will play and move around. And because it's an international game now at lower level still, they have to be so adaptable. And it's always amazing the small things on which careers, and it's endlessly fascinating for us, but we love talking about all of this stuff because we remember 1978. Go on, Justin.
It's like you said about the Christmas card list thing, though, because we became friends on Facebook and stuff. He's still playing, I think, isn't he, out in Hungary? He's probably coming towards the end of it now, but he's still playing, I think.
Figure out in its northwest, as opposed to all the other regions of Hungary that we're all familiar with, obviously. Never mind. you get my idea. But it was like, we were chatting to him because he was born in, I think it was Slovakia, but because it was so close to the border, I speak Slovakian. Yes, I speak Hungarian. And so I started learning Russian. 6 weeks later, I was fluent. Oh, okay. There's me basically been shouting at Spanish waiters very loudly on the thought that would translate to Spanish for many years. Apparently it doesn't work. Who knew? Anyway, let's get to we've got a couple more players that I would just love to get to because I think that they're interesting. Very well known now, probably to younger supporters, as sitting alongside David Prutton on the Sky Championship coverage, Joby McAnuff, bought in, wide player. What are your memories of Joby?
Every time he played against us, he gave us problems because he was in that Crystal Palace team. They used to give us major problems, and we couldn't. It was he'd try and beat Lloyd. He couldn't beat Lloyd, so he'd go over to the side, try and beat Jordan, and he ended up in the centre, giving us all kinds of problems. But he's on the FA board now. I see him. I turn the television on. He's on there
always.
So he's forging a really good career for himself. Lovely guy, really nice, friendly guy. Again, wicked sense of humour. He would cut people down like the, every dressing room is. The only thing about Joby was I just wanted to get more end product out of him because he used to do some amazing things and they'd be like, finish it off score. He had these opportunities to get so many opportunities that so many players can't get to get into positions to score. And he just, the goalkeeper would get a touch on it. But he was a good player, a willing runner, clever. But the thing is, if I compare him to Ashley Young, Ashley's a better player, but you still want Joby in your team to be in and around it, to put him under pressure. Again, a great guy. And I'm glad he's forging himself a couple of careers in the FA and also on the TV.
No, he's shown that, I think, having a bit of grey matter and being able to... He's done, yeah, absolutely, doing very well. We're gonna finish this section off, but we won't come to him just yet with John Joe O'Toole, because I think that's a nice segue from
Joe O'Toole.
Oh, yeah, we'll get there in a second.
What a shout. What a shout.
Exactly. But I just want to cover off on, as you said, how do you replace... It's like, how do you solve a problem like Maria? I'm having a Sound of Music moment here. This isn't good, is it? How do you replace Marlon? And I think that was always something that caused real difficulty. With Marlon's exit, was there at any point before he finally went off to Wigan where it felt from watching it like he was, no, he wants away? And when a player is fully committed, we know, we've seen it under your tenure, he wants away. We've talked about players like Tamash. We had other players like kind of Cabba. Obviously, the one that we inevitably look at is obviously Nathan Ellington as well. It's a very hard thing for it to replace. With those guys, why didn't it work on their side? And what do you think could have been adjusted from the club's perspective? Was it just not a good fit, or were there other things behind it? But start off with Marlon and then replacing Marlon, so to speak.
Yeah, where Marlon's concerned, I think he gave good service. He was great for me, really easy to deal with as a manager because we had a bond where both of us were just had a big point to prove. I've never known a player. He wasn't disruptive in any way, but he'd come and he'd come and talk to me and he'd tell me his mind.
Yeah.
So he'd say to me, I need to go. I need to move. You've got other strikers. And I'd say, listen, that ain't your business. You just got to be, so we can get the right price for you. You're going to stay. And to be fair to him, he did just get on with it. Mm-hmm. Steve Cabba had an amazing period where he scored about 7 or 8 goals for Sheffield United. And we managed to get him the season after, but he didn't have the hunger that Marlon had. I was trying to get somebody like him that was going to run him behind, that was going to stretch him, that could play with Darius. But they just didn't click. Whereas whatever anybody says about Marlon, he was brave. He would go. If it meant him getting a goal, he would go and get hurt. Whereas he can't always say that about some of the other number nines.
Yeah.
And Nathan was a real killer for me because I'd seen him at West Brom a lot and thought that he could be the guy that plays the number 10 that opens up the game, that plays in between the lines. Because as you remember, once we lost, once Youngie went, Marlon went, even Joby to a certain extent, we did become quite predictable in our style of play.
Yeah.
In the first season, we were shit up because we could play up, behind, over, through, sideways, had options to be able to do all those things. Whereas now we're getting, particularly in the Premier League, when we lost Youngie and Marlon, we were becoming very one predictable.
Right.
So getting Nathan in, I thought, would be, well, that'll be great because he'll cover all bases. He'll be able to do this and to be able to do that. But sometimes things don't work. And in his case, it didn't work. Could he have been given more of a chance? Probably. But at that point in time, I probably should have just got him on the pitch and just let him work his way through it. But we're trying to stay in the Premier League at the same time. So, yeah, I think that's probably one of my regrets, that I didn't get more out of Nathan Ellington and Steve Cabba. They're the hardest ones to find, aren't they? The ones that get all the goals and make and win the games.
I do remember Cabba scoring that goal from that Lee Bromby throw-in, and he came charging over to you, didn't he, once he scored the goal?
He did.
So, yeah, he wasn't the most exciting forward, but, you know, how do you replace Marlon, like you say? It's quite tricky, right?
And we've spoken about Darius and Marlon as a partnership. and suddenly trying to replace a partnership with a with any piece that isn't like the jigsaw piece you've taken away, doesn't necessarily fit, isn't necessarily compatible or working in the same way. And of course, he played with Jason Roberts, hadn't he, at Wigan, and that was a partnership that just seemed to work almost like kind of Cole and York at Man United. They just seem to be there. Yeah. Sometimes it's different jigsaw pieces not quite working together.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around, you've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.